702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
It's 7 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday evening. The name's Arabile Kumete. We're on The Money Show, which is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, providing solutions that can turn numbers into tangible business solutions at this year's APSA Beyond the Budget Dialogue. Now that's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. This evening I stand in, of course, for Bruce Whitfield again. And we continue to get in some interesting conversations. Not so long ago, just this week, we saw the unemployment figures. A big 1.7 percentage point increase in that number. And we need to try and talk not just about the overall figure, which of course is scary, but what happens even to youth employment? How do we save that? How do we make sure that we can actually prevent that from going, well, it's already out of control, but even further out of control? And do perhaps NGO jobs try to help the situation? Can they? We'll discuss that a whole lot. Plus, there's been a whole lot of perhaps protests to the fact that Section 12J investments have effectively been thrown out or cancelled and won't be extended beyond their deadline around June this year. How positive is that when you're trying to say, let's invest in the economy, let's continue to push the focus into the country, and yet the one investment vehicle that South Africans could actually continue to invest in to support the country is now being cancelled. We'll talk about that. Plus, our Friday file is the Seeds of Kindness. We talked to Este Skuman, who talks us through that company and what exactly they do as they decide to go all organic. Plus, it is Friday, of course, so it's the Brutal Biz Quiz. All that and more coming up. First, though, we're going to talk about South Africa's joblessness.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Now, we did note, as I said a little bit earlier on, just with regards to the unemployment statistics in South Africa, it's absolutely harrowing, just the numbers that it continues to rise towards. It used to be called stubborn. I think the word is no longer just stubborn anymore. It is beyond that. Tashmia Ismail Saville is the CEO at Youth Employment Service. Remember, yes. Yep. Now we're going to talk about just whether NGOs can help solve the problem. And if so, why haven't we begun getting that far yet? Tashmia, thank you so much for the time. Appreciated this evening. I suppose that's the question. Can NGOs help solve South Africa's unemployment crisis?
So the YES initiative has been using NGOs quite effectively. We've created a platform model where we get corporates to join YES, commit to a salary for a young person, and then we funnel that salary to the NGO to be able to hire that young person at community level. I wouldn't say that NGOs can solve the unemployment problem because they don't have the funds to pay the salaries. We're getting the salaries from the corporate sector. But what NGOs can do is when they put young people to work, they can recruit and hire from communities where unemployment levels are high and skills levels are low. And they can transfer really great skill sets to these young people that also have a double whammy effect, because not only are we bringing incomes from corporates into the community, but they're also doing recycling projects, jobs in renewables, community healthcare. Our partners have youth that work in digital labs at schools. They support with school, a low-fee school administration programs, and they make huge impacts on disease burdens, nutrition at community level. So some of our partners are the Aurum Institute, Youth Health Africa. We even have a partner that teaches communities how to do yoga and breathing exercises to manage some of the anxiety. Also in gender-based violence, this helps. So we've got to understand that through the YES model, absolutely NGOs are a critical piece of our plan to create jobs and have a wide footprint in communities where it's needed.
Yeah.
But it's our corporate that the money's coming from to pay for those jobs. And that's what we've got to understand. Jobs don't just appear magically. Someone has to pay that salary. Someone has to create a business. And someone has to say, from the proceeds of this business, I am willing to hire and pay for more people. And that foundational economic principle doesn't change by bringing NGOs into the picture.
Yeah.
Even though they can amplify your impact.
Who would you say, I don't want to cast too much blame, but who would you say is perhaps at fault here for maybe not enhancing the process, creating a situation where this is at the forefront of creating and developing the kind of job scenario we'd actually want in the country, where it forms the basis of creating the right kind of environment for jobs, where the private sector is indeed paying a lot more for creating that job scenario?
So if you look at the way the Youth Employment Service works, when corporate partners join YES and register with us, they invest in a certain number of jobs, but they get something back. They get a BE level. So in addition, they feel good because this is a nice broad-based Black economic empowerment program. They can see their money really going down to grassroots levels to youth that need it. So far, we've done $2.8 billion in salaries to youth into youth wallets from our corporate sponsors. And they are getting levels up on their BE scorecard, and they're seeing good community impact with that. So when you ask this question, I mean, you know very well, this is a business show, that the jobs creation is part of a big chain of events that happens at a national level, at a macroeconomic level. Are businesses feeling confident about the economy? What makes businesses feel confident about the economy? Is it institutional stability? Is it infrastructure projects? You know, there's a range of things that give businesses the confidence to say, I will invest in jobs, I will grow my business. If the economy is in recession and the customers of those businesses are out of work, don't have the incomes to spend, businesses are going to lose confidence and say, I'm not going to hire people, I'm not going to grow my business because my customer base is shrinking. So, you know, the idea of creating jobs through business is the economy growing? Are the institutional factors that make businesses confident to expand, to make new businesses start and entrepreneurs start businesses, to make foreign firms invest in an economy? Because if they bring their foreign direct investment in, that creates jobs because they're building infrastructure, they're building factories, they're building programs that hire people. And so it's a very complex, interactive set of factors that results in the confidence to create a job. And then we've got our legacy issues, which still plague us and torment us today. And these legacy issues are that we have a very consolidated economy with lots of large firms in a very first world environment where they're hiring people that are not the unemployed. So, over 52% of our young people who are unemployed don't have a matric. In fact, 52% of people who are unemployed haven't finished school. And our first economy is hiring highly skilled individuals. So there's this massive gap between the parts of the economy that are growing and who you want to hire and who's available to hire in the unemployed pool.
Yep.
So these are deep, deep issues. We're now going back into the failure of the education system to produce the kind of human capital that can feed into a modern economy.
Look, 50,000 youth work placements resulting in the equivalent of 2.8 billion rand in salaries going into youth wallets with no state funding. One thing's for sure is that the Youth Employment Service is certainly trying to do its part in ensuring that youth unemployment doesn't become just a continuously overwhelming crisis, which it certainly is at present. But hopefully we can begin to change it. Begin to alter how the scenario looks. Tashmia, we're going to have to leave it there this Friday evening, but thank you so much for being part of this conversation, and we'll hopefully get in touch with you again very soon. The Chief Executive at the Youth Employment Service, that's Tashmia Ismail Saville.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Now, if you wanted to stay investing in South Africa. One of the things that government decided to do is that if you made an investment into a firm in South Africa, you could actually get a tax break out of that. You'd be able to, get or pay zero tax on that investment in the year that it's made. And that is a Section J, 12J of the Income Tax Act that was brought into effect in 2009. It does seem, however, that June the 30th will effectively be the last day. June the 30th, 2021 will be the last day effectively of the Section 12J investments clause, and it will not be extended beyond that. Effectively throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Dino Zokuolo is the chairman at 12J Association at South Africa in South Africa. Thank you so much for the time, Dino. This is perhaps one of those where you ask yourselves whether we're shooting ourselves in the leg here, considering we've been asking for investment. We keep asking people to try and stay in the country and believe in the change. And yet now we're not even going to say to them, we'll give you something for doing that.
Yeah, good evening, Arabile. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I mean, I think you summed it up beautifully. The reality is that we find ourselves in a bit of a hole in South Africa at the moment. You know, we see ultra high net worth and high net worth capital leaving the country at a rate that we haven't seen in a long time. And in 2009, government introduced this thing called Section 12J with a view to promoting private investment into SMMEs and creating jobs. And although it only really gained traction in 2016, since 2016, 12J has raised 11 billion rand from, you know, thousands and thousands of investors around South Africa and spent 5.5 billion of that across more than 360 SMMEs around the country. I mean, that's a 15 million rand average per business in businesses including renewable energy, student accommodation, education, hotels and tourism, technology, fintech, agriculture, etc. It's created about 10,500 jobs at an average cost per job of 126,000 rand. And that cost, in our view, should continue to go down as the businesses that have been invested into through Section 12J continue to grow and flourish. Mm. So, you know, really, I suppose the disappointment that we had in the budget speech on Wednesday is that notwithstanding the fact that Section 12J has gained a lot of traction, National Treasury took the view to not extend the sunset, which is set, as you mentioned, for 30 June this year.
Yeah, so was the environment right for Section 12J investments, though, in South Africa? I say this just on the back of Finance Minister Tito Mboweni yesterday speaking in Parliament, and he went on to say, speaking to lawmakers, that before we, you know, kind of speak about how the private sector, for example, is not investing in the country, we should first check on if we have the right kind of environment for them to do so. So in this regard, do you think South Africans or South African entities, whoever it may be, looked at this scenario and said, yeah, this is still the right environment for us to do so in order to help the country move forward?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, I think the answer to your question is that many of our investors in Section 12J, you know, were very skeptical around investing in Section, not just in Section 12J, but in South Africa, right? I mean, that is the right point is, how does one, in the context of what's going on at the moment economically in our country, how does one get comfort around making an investment in the country, not just an investment in the country, but a five-year lockup investment in the country? And the answer to the question is many can't. And so things like Section 12J really were the few positives that South Africa had for investors. And perhaps, you know, our view is that some of the clients that of ours that ordinarily would have taken their money offshore were persuaded to keep their money in South Africa for 5 years because of Section 12J. And so really, I suppose that what confuses us just a little bit is that, you know, National Treasury speak more and more to creating jobs, creating an investment-focused ecosystem in South Africa, and ultimately a country where SMMEs can grow and therefore jobs can be created. You know, it was a point that was discussed by the president in the SONA this year, where, you know, the point is that an environment in which SMMEs can thrive is inextricably linked to the creation of jobs in an environment where South Africa can thrive. So I suppose the confusion is why one would kill an incentive focused on investing in SMMEs at a time when, you know, we really need anything that we can as a country to promote doing just that. I mean, and we can get into, if you'd like, some of the reasons that National Treasury had for canning Section 12J. But as you said in the introduction, throwing the baby out with the bathwater is exactly what's happened here. There are particular nuances that Treasury didn't like. Sure. But instead of changing them, they got rid of the whole thing.
Yeah. Let's talk, one, very quickly then about those reasons. But two, I also want to touch on whether this means that there will be an increase in capital flight then, do you think?
Yeah, so I mean, let's start with the second point first. I think that there will absolutely be an increase in capital flights. So it's kind of linked to your first question around why National Treasury don't like Section 12J. So their first point is that they don't like the fact that high net worth South African taxpayers use Section 12J to not pay tax. That the principle for them is contrary to what they call the progressivity of the tax law. And the concept of theirs is that rich people or wealthier people should pay tax. Now, I think that this argument is flawed, unfortunately, for the point that you've just asked, which is, will this increase capital flights? Absolutely. I mean, we work in the world of asset management, and we can tell you that many South Africans at the moment are faced with the conundrum, do I invest locally or do I take my money offshore into safe haven assets, safe haven currencies, which they perceive to be lower risk? So the fact that, you know, 12J is funded by wealthy individuals, sure, maybe that's not the ideal situation for Treasury. But the fact that the money's being kept in South Africa for a minimum period of 5 years and not being taken out of the country to benefit some other economy, in our view, is a huge plus. I mean, the other issues that National Treasury had were that they argued that there were certain projects that were invested into in 12J that were, in their view, not risky and therefore that would ordinarily have attracted capital anyway. Which again is partially true, I suppose. But then again, if you look at the fact that a large amount of investments in the industry have been invested into, for example, hotels and tourism, and then you look at what's happened to hotels and tourism through COVID-19, once again, the question asks, well, would an investor ordinarily invest in a hotel right now when the industry has been decimated by COVID-19? And in many instances, the answer is no. So again, there's an incentive changing behavior. Their third point was just around the fact that in some instances, the investments hadn't yet made as large an economic impact on the country as what they'd hoped. But I think there, the shortcoming of the analysis really is that, unfortunately, a lot of these investments were only made in the last 18 to 24 months. And so to look at an investment into an SMME that was only recently made and then to try and draw conclusions out of that over such a short space of time is a very difficult thing to do. I mean, yeah. It is our view that an SMME needs at least 5 years in order to properly incubate and properly grow before it starts to pay a lot of tax to the fiscus and to create jobs. And so again, it was just, it's unfortunately a case that at this point it will ultimately become a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, sure. National Treasury can it now? It'll probably be unsuccessful if one looks back in certain instances because it was canned too soon. And again, you know, the issue, I suppose, is that if it was tweaked and Treasury made small changes to get rid of the things they didn't like but retained the concept, which is we're giving a tax break to promote investment into SMMEs, you know, I think that would have been a much better outcome for South Africa than just getting rid of the whole thing.
Yeah. Throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That certainly is what it feels like in this regard. Dino Zukolo, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Chairman at 12J Association, really talking about just the cancellation, effectively, the non-extension of 12J investments and what that sort of means, not just for SMMEs, but really just for business in South Africa, investments in South Africa as well, and how massive a change that could be.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
So it was red all across the board. Blood was effectively on the market dance floor today. And we saw even the JSE All Share take itself down nearly 2% by the close of trade. The US market last night was basically seeing red. We saw the Asian market get fall today quite prodigiously as well. Europe was down. South Africa down today. Also, it just doesn't seem like there's any positivity anywhere. And it all follows on from the fall in bond yields, or the rise in bond yields, should I say. Thato Mashego, who joins us now, he's a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Thato, thank you so much for the time. Sure, what a day it was in the markets.
Good morning, Arabile. And you're 100% correct. It wasn't one of the most positive days we've ever seen. I think it's fair to say that. And you're right in highlighting the rise in U.S. yields. And we all know that global finance is based on the yield curve and the U.S. yield curve still being the sort of risk-free rate which all other assets are priced off, has obviously started to rise. And there's various reasons for that, I suppose, that we can speculate. But not all gloom and doom, I would venture to say.
Yeah.
Some investors have been exiting the bond market to look at opportunities in other risky assets. And so obviously that leads to rising bond yields. But the reason is because people are optimistic of improving economic situations in the U.S. economy. So it's a bit of a mixed picture, shall we say.
There is voting that's happening today out in the United States when it comes to the $1.9 trillion stimulus package that Joe Biden has put forward to the Senate as well. One of the things to that is that if more money comes into the market, there's the ability to go into riskier assets, which of course means that South Africa also gets to benefit. But bond yields become perhaps not just the only thing people begin to invest in, right? Does this just mean that this is just a slight blip in the market for now and that we'll get back to what looked like a bull rally for quite some time?
We certainly hope so. And I suppose bond yields are suggesting to us that investors feel that the stimulus package will be passed, which obviously means there's further support for the U.S. economy, which is consumption-led. And if U.S. adults or every single U.S. adult gets an additional $1,400 into their back pocket, we know that unemployment rates have come down since the peak last year. And so a lot of that money will be spent on discretionary sources. Some of it may end up in Robinhood, for instance. Some of it will end up at Walmart and Amazon and in many other locations. So there is a likelihood that we will see a rally, a consumption-led rally, which obviously benefits the rest of the world. Everyone who exports to the U.S. and commodity producers like South Africa, as we sell to the people who then export to the U.S. as well.
Yeah, so no need to panic, I suppose, then, right?
Well, all else being equal, which is, I suppose, that that big economic insurance policy that we always use. For the moment, no need to panic. We certainly hope so. It looks like the outlook, at least in the short to medium term, is positive. That obviously assumes that we continue seeing a fairly strong or positive vaccine rollout. We're seeing that in the U.S., at least relative to Europe. So the U.S. and Asia, we're seeing positive news on the vaccine front, which points to a faster recovery, obviously, of global economic activity. But as you know, so quickly these days, we could be saying something completely different next month, but let's hope not.
Just never know, yeah. Very quickly then, any nervousness or is there a sense of changing the outlook and how you think about markets right now, considering the kind of year we've had in the past 12 months or so, and how things perhaps aren't so sure at this point?
Well, I suppose one of the themes which people have been looking at, since the beginning of the year, is the prospect of inflation. And that has become quite topical. And obviously, with bond yields continuing to rise, there is that argument that people feel that this continued QE and this additional $2 trillion obviously adds to the monetary base. But does that eventually lead to inflation? Well, if the dollar keeps on depreciating, that also feeds into the argument of imported inflation in terms of trade starting to weaken slightly. So that is somewhat of a bearish argument. And at what level of inflation does the Fed start to get nervous? Obviously, Jerome Powell has not indicated that anything around 2% level inflation would cause nervousness. And so it's still overly positive in terms of the overall, outlook. A lot of people still assume that we will see somewhat of a V-shaped or K-shaped recovery based on a rapid vaccine rollout. So that still seems to be most people's base case. However, fears around inflation, especially with the new Biden administration and the stimulus package, are starting to increase, as well as at a equities level, somewhat of a sector rotation out of sectors that have done extremely well, like tech, and people starting to look at some of the the more bricks and mortar industries that may recover this year.
Tato, always good chatting to you. Thank you so much. Tato Mashego, Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, explaining the ins and outs of what has certainly been a very difficult day on the markets, red across the dance floor.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
So the Friday File this Friday evening then takes a look at just choosing to be the change you want to see. An Earthkind online store for the compassionate eco-conscience. We are lucky enough now to talk to Este Skuman, the founder of Seeds of Kindness. Este, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. Let's talk just about what is Seeds of Kindness. What does it actually do? Not just sustainable and conscious living, but I mean, what are the actual aspects of the business?
Hi, Arabella. Thanks for having me. Seeds of Kindness was actually born from stains on swimwear and clothing after returning from a holiday. So that inspired me and my fiance to actually start looking at the ingredients of the products that we use on our bodies. And it just sparked this idea of, you know, creating an online website where you can include products from different kinds of products that people use every day, and allowing people to make decisions, easy decisions on a daily basis, to try and, you know, incorporate products into their lifestyle that's better for their bodies, but also better for the environment. And that's basically why we decided to start Seeds of Kindness. It's only been 1 year, so it's very new and we are branching out. But that was the main reason why we started Seeds of Kindness.
In starting it then, and I mean, getting everything on board, it's kind of making sure that the right market is sort of in place for it as well. How did you figure that would certainly be a market that people are interested in and open for people to engage in?
So I think we don't really have a choice anymore. I think everyone is getting more and more familiar with, you know, the environmental change that we have to make. So it's not an individual, you know, decision that we make. If you go to your local Woolworths or your Checkers, you are kind of forced not to buy plastic bags anymore. So I think we are all getting more conscious about the decisions that we make on a daily basis. And one of my other companies that I run is a marketing agency. And, you know, the combination of the skills that I have was just something that I realized you can put any product on market. You just need to market it correctly. So it's not necessarily a case of, you know, doing tons of market research. It's about marketing your product correctly. But it's not just about that. You know, we all make these decisions every day. And it was just time to actually start focusing a little bit more on that, because it is a trend. It's a trend in the sense that we all need to start making these decisions daily. And, you know, it's not necessarily something we want to force people to buy into. It's just that it's just the natural trend that's occurring. And we are just creating an opportunity for people to take part in this and to actually find several products in one online space.
Is it catching on? I mean, is there a sense of people actually wanting to be a part of all of this, right? And actually say to themselves, yes, we don't have a choice. We need to start thinking consciously about this and how to create this sort of sustainable living.
I think there's definitely traction. It's not, like I said, it's not something you want to force people to do. But I think we are getting to a point where it's just naturally people are inquisitive. They are more curious. They want to understand what are in the products that we use. What products do I put on my baby when I take my baby to, when I have take my baby to the bath and I, you know, put these moisturizers and these lotions on them? Do I know and am I guaranteed that that is not going to irritate my baby's skin, or that there are chemicals and harmful toxins in those products that I put on my baby's skin? So it extends to more than just the mommy audience. It's more about the, you know, the bigger scope of things is, the cottons that we buy, the organic cottons, the organic hemp, what is the farming processes, you know, what kind of impact on a global scale can we make by just purchasing something slightly different? And I think, you know, eventually we'll probably not have a choice anymore. So as much as we want to create a space where people can go and purchase these products, it's not something that we want to force onto anyone, but it is definitely gaining traction. And the type of audience and engagement that we have is definitely a conscious and a audience that is aware of what they're putting on their skin. They are looking for the products that don't have those chemicals. They are more aware of the purchase decisions and how that impacts, you know, the sustainability in general and everyday decisions. Simple, small purchase decisions can actually make a big difference if we all just, you know, play a role.
Yeah, actually made just a conscious effort to get things right as well. We keep asking for change. We keep saying, you know, we need to try and better not just the economy, but overall society, right? And this is certainly one of those ways. In trying to get people to form a part of this as well, and trying to own the process, if you want to call it that. Seeds of Kindness has also, in a way, needed to find a way to make people understand this a whole lot more. Is there a sense of education that you're also having to give to some of the people that you come into contact with?
So yes and no. You know, we're a reseller of existing products at the moment. We are looking to launch our very own product pretty soon. And I think from an educational perspective, we're going to have to do a lot more education on that specific product. But that will be a Seeds of Kindness product. With regards to all the other products, you know, the brands themselves actually spend a lot of time pushing their causes and, you know, their ingredients and focusing a lot more about those specific products. So we don't necessarily find that we have to educate. We do engage with our customers and often they do ask. But in general, because we are resellers of established brands already, there's a lot less pressure on Seeds of Kindness to be doing that, you know, educational side. But we are very excited to be launching our very own product soon, and we will definitely be incorporating blog content, video tutorials, anything that is informative to educate the audience. And I think in general, the kind of audience that are currently coming to our site are already clued up in that sense. So it's not necessarily an audience at the moment that needs a lot more information. But I think we are definitely moving towards people asking more questions, people being more curious, people wanting to understand. And I think eventually, you know, we'll all just do a lot more research into the type of products that we use, because there's this trend where you're not only looking at the kind of products that you eat, you know, the kind of ingredients in the products that we eat, but people are more moving towards what they put on their bodies, because our, you know, our skin is our biggest organ. And when you consume products through your mouth, you actually have filters and stomach acids who can filter out a lot of the toxins, but your skin doesn't actually have that kind of effect. So you can't really protect yourself unless you start doing a little bit more research into what you can exclude from your skincare. And I think skincare in general, which is the biggest movers on our website at the moment, I think we are currently in that space where people are a lot more conscious about skincare. But I think it's growing into different areas in terms of organic cotton and organic hemp and just farming practices in general. So we are seeing that traction definitely happening.
Yeah, that certainly is good news on that front. Well, Este, all the best with it. I certainly hope that a whole lot more will come out of it as well, and that a lot more people will get to understand it better. Este Xikuman, the founder of Seeds of Kindness, joining us there for our Friday File.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
As we usually do on a Friday, it is the Brutal Biz Quiz, of course. and we get into it now. And going to ask you a few sets of questions. Please do call in 011-883-0702-021-446-0567 as we get right into the Brutal Biz Quiz. Our first question this evening: how much did the finance minister increase traditional beer by? How much did the finance minister increase traditional beer by? 011-883-0702-021-446-0567.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. Unpacking data-driven insights and analysis to turn numbers into tangible business solutions at this year's Absa Beyond the Budget Dialogue. Now that's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
All right, we get straight into the Brutal Biz Quiz then for this Friday evening. 8 minutes to go till the top of the hour. KG, you're going to be able to take on our first question then as well in this moment. Before we get that, though, a new year does, of course, feel like a blank slate, except the economy is, of course, still down. Sovereign debt is still up and the pandemic is still here. For the clarity you need from the 2021 budget speech, join audit, tax and advisory firm BDO for a roundtable discussion with Busi Mavuso, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, Chedza Madzima, who is the head of South Africa Research and Operational Risk at Fitch Solutions, Kevin Lings, chief economist at Stanlib, and Professor David Warnicker, BDO's head of technical tax. To register, visit bdo.co.za. All right, let's get straight into it then. KG, how much did the finance minister increase traditional beer by?
0%.
That is 100% correct then. The finance minister Tito Mboweni joked when he was giving his most welcomed budget speech that the traditional beer has not been taxed since Trevor Manuel was finance minister. Meanwhile, tax on 340 milliliters cans of beer did increase by 14 cents, that is. KG, okay, let's get into question number two. Roy Bagattini is the CEO of which listed company? I'll give you a hint here. It is a retailer. It is a company you go to buy goods like food and groceries.
I'm going to guess Pick n Pay.
Oh, no, it's not Pick n Pay, KG, unfortunately. It isn't, sadly not. Let's go to Obakeng then in Sandton. Obakeng, do you know the answer? Roy Bagattini is the CEO of which JSE-listed company?
I think it is, I know it. Okay, no, it's not coming to mind. Let's pass.
Interviewed him yesterday, unfortunately. Can't just pass on it. Gonna have to go to another one here. Let's then go to Tabiso in Centurion. Tabiso, the CEO of which listed company is Roy Bagattini?
Woolworths.
100% correct. The JSE listed company recorded its first half year profits in 5 years. And we interviewed Roy then yesterday. Moët Hennessy bought a 50% stake in which hip hop mogul's champagne brand, Tabiso? Oh, it happened this week. It was absolutely great. It was just incredible news. And everyone just thought, this guy certainly deserves it. His wife is obviously a big time musician, and so too is he in the rap industry in the United States. So, who is the hip hop mogul that Moët and Hennessy bought a 50% stake of in their champagne brand? No?
Jay-Z.
There we go, indeed. Acquiring a 50% stake in Jay-Z's champagne brand in an effort to up its sort of cool factor, if you want to call it that. All right, here's the next question then. Which telecoms company did Shamil Youssef work for in Spain before returning to South Africa as head of Vodacom? This was, of course, in an interview that he did with Bruce Whitfield earlier this week. Do you know who that person is, or which company that is, should I say?
Oh, Arabile. Is that Vodafone?
Look at you go. It is Vodafone Spain. He was this week's shapeshifter, of course, on Monday, and you can catch a snippet of his interview after the news headlines and as well in this week's Best Bits. You just keep on going. Okay, let's go again, Tabi. So here we go. DSY. Just get that in your head. The acronym DSY is the JSE trading code of which company? Just think about it. They also had their results come out yesterday. And we did speak to the CEO. It is effectively the biggest insurer of your body in some way in the country.
Isn't it the company where I'm paying my Vitality Discovery?
More likely than not. Look at you. Yes, indeed. It is Discovery Holdings. As I said, the CEO, Adrian Gore, did speak to us yesterday about their interim earnings. All right. Which U.S. cryptocurrency exchange platform plans to list on the NASDAQ? I want you to think about this one a little bit because it's not just the ones you think it is. There is one in particular, U.S. cryptocurrency exchange platform that plans to list on the NASDAQ. Which is that, Tabiso?
I was on a roll.
Come on, nothing? Oh, it's unfortunate. Okay, all right. Well done, though. Good one on you, Tabiso, for playing so far as well and getting so far in all of it. Koketso, though, in Greenstone. We're far along now. Don't know if you're going to get this, but can you perhaps take the baton from here? Which U.S. cryptocurrency exchange platform plans to list on the NASDAQ?
I'm going to try and say Luno.
No, it's not Luno. Remember, Luno is actually the platform on which cryptocurrencies are traded, particularly here in South Africa as well. So that is a different sort of exchange. So which U.S., so in the United States, which U.S. cryptocurrency exchange platform plans to list on the NASDAQ? Sonwabo in Dobsonville, do you have the answer?
Yes, Wall Street.
Sorry, say that again?
Wall Street.
No, it's not Wall Street. That's not the answer, definitely, on that one, unfortunately. Diedrich out in Bedford View, you've got the answer to this one?
Yeah, is it, it's called Coinbase, I think it is.
You are 100% correct. That is actually it. It's the largest cryptocurrency exchange in the United States. I said that their revenue surpassed 1 billion rand in 2020, so they're willing to list themselves on the NASDAQ. All right, it's the final question, Diedrich. You get this. You basically are the winner of the Brutal Biz Quiz on the 26th of February, this Friday evening. Time Bank is linked to which local billionaire that wants to be the president of CAF?
Sorry, I didn't cut off the which.
All right, let's repeat that. I'll repeat that question with pleasure. Time Bank is linked to which local billionaire that wants to be the president of CAF? So who is the billionaire that is linked to Time Bank and also wants to be the president of the African Football Federation called CAF?
Yes, I think you've got me on that one, eh?
No, he even had a press conference yesterday. Diedrich, I trusted you on that one. So sorry. Simon, let's get to you then. Do you know the answer to that one?
That's Petrus Motsepe.
There we go. And you then come in and swoop in and take the prize. You are the winner of this evening's Brutal Biz Quiz. Thank you so much for that one, Simon. Time Bank got 1.6 billion rand injection from global partners. It is indeed being liked by the likes of the Philippines as well and could actually be launching there in the second quarter of next year. Folks, thank you so much for joining us, though, this time around for the Brutal Biz Quiz. We, of course, give you the best bits coming up after the 7 o'clock news headlines as well. Do remember, though, that a whole host of economic data is certainly happening across the week, and we'll try to give that to you as and when it happens.